Okay, let us make a start on sheet 34. What we're trying to achieve here is to get an understanding of the beginning of the Torah Shebaal Peh process in the way that we know it today, meaning the Mishnah, the Gemara, etc., and to understand where that came from. First of all, this is a couple of repeats for people who were here last semester, but there is a prohibition on creating a text of oral law. It is not an issa to write down the oral law, it's an issa to create a canon. You know what I mean by canon? An authoritative text. That was also. Look at number one. Ksiv. There's a Gemara in Gittin. It says, Ksiv nechayes hadvarim ha'ele. Moshe Rabbeinu is told to write certain things down. Ksiv then it says, Ki alpi hadvarim ha'ele. Other things are alpeh. So Hakeit said, how does that work? How are some things in writing, some things not in writing? So the Gemara says, Dvarim shebichtav iyasa rashay la'amram alpeh. Things which are meant to be written, you can't say them orally. Meaning, there is a halachic issue, actually, in reciting Chumash orally. There are exceptions, things that are very well known, like Shema and things like that. But if you need to be moti someone, let's say you're laning, you need to be moti someone in the Kriyas HaTorah, if that's how it works, I'm not getting into exactly how that works, you can't just say Baal Peh. If you're a Bar Mitzvah boy, you know your Bar Mitzvah Parsha, backwards, forwards, you don't even need to read it. You can't just sort of look, have the Sefer Torah, then look in the air and say it from memory. You have to say it from the Ksav, that's with Torah Shebichtav. Dvarim Shebaal Peh. But Torah Shebaal Peh, though it doesn't say you're not allowed to write it. It says, Iyata Rishai La'omram Bichsav. What does that mean? Iyata Rishai La'omram Bichsav. You can't say it from a text. You can't say it from a text. Meaning, you can't create a text of Torah Shebaal Peh. You sometimes have to write things down. Of course you have to write things down. People always make notes to help them memorize. You can't create a text of Torah Shebaal Peh. Even an oral text. Remember I talked about this last semester? What's an example of an oral text?
Mary
had a little lamb. Right. Mary had a little lamb. Mary didn't have a little heart defect. Mary didn't have a little problem with her upstairs neighbors. How do you know that? Mary had a little lamb. Because it's an oral text, you know? You've probably never seen it in writing, but everybody knows that Mary had a little lamb. It's an oral text. You can't make a Mishnah into a text. You can't make oral law into a text at this stage. If you just go to number three for a second, you'll see that people always wrote things down. Rashi said there was such a thing as Megillat Sdarim, literally hidden scrolls. She says, Rashi, she says, Tiru, they hid them away. Because they shouldn't have written them. So you can ask her, what are these naughty rabbis doing, writing things they're not allowed to write and then hiding them away? If you're not allowed to write them, don't write them. So the answer is no, it wasn't that they're not allowed to write them. Because she showed him, they were Yachid Chadashim, She'ena Nishnim, Bebeis HaMedrash, if they heard new Chidushim, things they hadn't heard before. Of course they'd write them down. Shalai Yishtechachu, so they wouldn't forget them. That's for their personal notes. But Mastiri Nechta Megillah, they would hide away the Megillah. Why they would hide away the Megillah? Because they didn't want it to turn into an authorized text. You always have to have Torah Shebaal Peh as an unstructured holy ideas. Last semester we had a whole shiur on this idea that Torah Shebaal Peh was not holy words. Torah Shebichtav is holy words. It is words which have intrinsic kedusha. Torah Shebaal Peh, it's the ideas that are kodesh, but we don't want to turn it into a form of words. Indeed, those people who did turn it into words and did write it down were in big trouble. I brought you an extract from Megillat Taanit. Now, do you know what Megillat Taanit is? Have you ever come across it before? I don't think we've brought anything from Megillat Taanit. Megillat Taanit is one of the earliest sources of actually a text of Torah Shebaal Peh. It was put together in it's not really a text of Torah Shebaal Peh. It is a list of those dates during the second Beis HaMikdash that you weren't allowed to have a fast. That's why it's called Megillat Taanit. It's not in the Gemara, it's nothing to do with the Megillah, it's nothing to do with Esther, it's nothing to do with Gemara Megillah. It's the scroll of fasts. It was the scroll of the dates that you were not allowed to fast. Special holiday, minor holidays that they had during the second Beis HaMikdash. All of these now have been scrapped, apart from two, Hanukkah and Purim, which are in Megillat Taanit, but which survived the Churban. Have a look at what it says in the Megillat Taanit number two. Ba'arba'asa b'tamuz, on the 14th day of Tamuz, nitvatel sefer ha'gezerot. This book that they had in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, called Sefer HaGezeiras, it was destroyed, it was thrown out. Shalom Hesped, you're not allowed to have a Hesped on that day. It's a mini holiday, because this was the day that they got rid of the Sefer HaGezeiras. So what was the Sefer HaGezeiras? So look what it said. The Tzedukim, the Sadducees, created this book of Torah Shebaal Peh. All of the people who were chayv different death penalties. When people would ask, what is the halacha on this area? Marin lo sefer, they would show them a book. In other words, they would show them halacha written in the book like we have today. This, in those dying times, was a disaster. Omelahim, they said to them, minam she zechayv skila, zechayv srefa, zechayv harega, zechayv chanika. How do you know that these people are chayv? Because it says they're in the book. Loi hayyodim lahavi rayim in a Torah. They couldn't show you how you learned this from the psukim. They couldn't give you any sources. They couldn't give you any Torah shebal peh. They did it because it was written in the book. The Chacham said to them, doesn't it say it has the potential of a pair? You can't write these things down. And Yom Shabbitluhu, the day they got rid of that, Asu Yomtsev, they made it to a Yomtsev. So during the second Beis HaMikdash, the idea of writing Tosha Baal Peh, the idea of turning it into a text, like an authoritative text, not just personal notes, was completely off the charts, was completely unacceptable. And the Rambam says this clearly, number four, Yemos Moshe Rabbeinu Ad Rabbeinu HaKadosh, from the days of Moshe until Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Who's Rabbeinu HaKadosh? Our holy rabbi. They could all be called that. Who's Rabbeinu HaKadosh? We also know him as? Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who put together the Mishnah. From Moshe Rabbeinu till Rabbeinu HaKadosh, loy chibur chibur shemalamdim oisav rabim. They didn't have any chibur. What's a chibur? Here, what does it mean? It doesn't mean a group.
Right.
Yeah, it means a collection. It means a, what's a machaber in Hebrew? An author. An author. It means they didn't collect together Torah Shebaal Peh. In every generation, the people who led that generation would write for themselves notes. Hashmuz are the things they learned. Shashamim Barabosa, they learned from their rabbis. For whom alamid our peh barabim, but in public they wouldn't teach from the notes. There was no textbooks. They wouldn't give things out. They would always teach it by al peh, because again, it's the ideas that matter. The words will hold you back. Remember, we had a whole class about why it had to be that we didn't create a text that touched by peh. Those of you who remember, but those of you who didn't remember, there were many reasons. We said because the Torah, a text is less personal, less intrinsic to you. We said because a text is less easily understood, more easily misunderstood. We said because a text could be taken by the non-Jews and adopted as their customs. And there were loads of reasons why we weren't allowed to do this. Everyone wrote their own personal notes as they heard them. And new ideas. Things that they learned in the new way of learning things through the Shlosha Shrei Midos, etc., etc. It's only at the time of the Mishnah that they put together an actual text. And we'll see. And a text, by the way, doesn't mean they wrote it. We'll look at that. The Mishnah may not have been written when it was created. It may have been retained as an oral text, but it was not allowed to be, until that point, a text. How did that change? How did that change? Even at the time of the Gemara, there was a reluctance to actually write some things. Look at number five. People who write down the halacha, kasoref haTorah. They're burning the Torah. The haloni behem is someone who learns from them. Ainu notos chag, it's no schar. So even writing halachas, making textbooks, even after the Mishnah was problematic. So why was it that we had to move to a situation where we created these texts? So this is very important to understand, because without this, we don't know why we had a Talmud. Let's have a look at some of these sources from 6 onwards. So Hillel and Shammai. Looking number 6, we saw this source last semester. Shebetchila kishinishtach haTorah miYisrael, when we had our first crisis in Torah, Torah began to be forgotten. Ala Ezra mi Bavel v'yasta. Ezra came from Bavel and if you like, established. What did Ezra do? We talked a lot about that last semester. Anyone remember or anyone know? What did Ezra bring to the party to if you like, change the paradigm shift? What's that? All the different halachas, drabonons, many drabonons he created. What else did Ezra do?
The
ksav. He changed the ksav. He produced a translation of the Torah into Aramaic. Lots of the structure of Torah Shebaal Peh that we know today was introduced by, at the time of Ezra, Mianshei Knesset HaGedolah. brachas, shmona esrei, tefillas, a lot of the drabonos, shachris, mincha, mariv, minyan, kaddish, all of these things were all from that time. There was a lot of innovation then. Chazarav and Ishtacha, when the Torah again went into crisis, towards the end of the second temple, remember Ezra was beginning second temple, give me a year roughly for Ezra, leaving aside the big controversy about the years.
It was the 5th century.
5th century? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Good, correct. You have to talk loud, Lee. Okay, 5th century. 5th century BCE, exactly. Later, at the end of the Second Temple, when things went into crisis again, Allah Hillel Ababli Biyasta. So Hillel came and saved the day. What was in crisis at the end of the Second Temple? Tell me. Tell me.
Assimilation
was not. The Romans were killing people. The Jews were killing each other. You had this
apathy,
mass breakdown of Hellenization and the Tzidukim, and we had classes on all the different sects that were in the Yerushalayim and the Essenes and the Sadducees. Torah was in massive crisis. Hillel saved the day. What did Hillel do? So one of the things that Hillel did that we didn't talk about yet is this. Look at number 7. This is quote from the Sefer Yuchsin. The Sefer Yuchsin is the reason I give you the who's who at the end, by the way, is so that you'll have not just an idea of what it says, but where it comes from. Because part of the purpose of this course is to give you perspective. So I should be able to ask you, where did these people live? It's not just enough for you to know who said it, but you have to have a bit of context. Sefer Yuchsin was a book written in Spain in the 1400s. Okay, I brought you that at the end, who's who, Rav Avram Zakuto. So he says the following. Hillel Sidel Sheish Sedarim Al Peh. Now what's this Sheish Sedarim? 6 Sedarim. What's he talking about? Right. He was the first one to come up with this idea of creating 6 organized Sedarim. Sedarim, literally, Seder means order. Alpeh. Okay? Hakol Limatera, which included all the Torah. Again, nothing written down, just a structure. Mishamu Alan, from then onwards, Kadesh Eloi Tishtani HaTorah, so they wouldn't be changed. So he wanted to actually sort of freeze frame a little bit and stop things from overflowing.
That is like the Mary Habit of
Lamp. Correct. We're moving into that paradigm slowly. Vezem Itzchilat Malchus Hurdus. And this happened at the beginning of Hurdus. Who was Hurdus? King Herod. So you get here a date as to when roughly the first vestiges of the Mishnah as we know it begin to emerge. Again, the Torah Shebaal Peh is much older than that. It dates back through the Second Temple, through the First Temple, some of it all the way to Sinai. We talked about that last semester. But you have the beginning of the idea of a structure to the Mishnah. Now, the information, a lot of it is there. It's just not structured. Go over to source number 8. I want to make sure you got the most out of source number 8. Have a look here. This is talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. This is quite a famous Gemara from Bava Basra. Shmoyin Talmidim Hayu Loyla Hillel Azakin. So Hillel had 80 Talmidim. Godel Shebekulam Yonasan ben Uziel. The greatest one was Yonasan ben Uziel. Katan Shebekulam. The least one is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Okay. What do they say about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Amaru Alava Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Shaloi Hi Niach Mikra. He didn't ever leave off Mikra. What's Mikra?
Torah.
Mishnah. Gemara. Now, when did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai live? He's a Tana, the instruction based on Mikdash, Hillel's student. Gemara, when was Gemara from? Much later. Halachas, Agadas, Digdukhe Sofer, Digdukhe Soferim, Kalim Vachomer, Chamurim, Kal Vachomer, Kzeira Shavas, and he goes, Tufas, which is the calendar, Gematrias, which is numerology. Okay, Mashalas and the different Mashalim, the Kosis, the Mashalim, Shualim, all the different ideas that they had, all the way through to the end to Havayas the Abaya and Rava, the arguments of Abaya and Rava. He also had all of that. Who are Abaya and Rava? You've heard of Abaya and Rava. Who are they?
Amorim.
They lived when, roughly? Give me a rough century. Even after. 4th century. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was living in the 1st century CE. And he had already the arguments of Abaya and Rava. How does that work? What does that mean? Abaya and Rava lived 300 years after him. What does it mean that he had the arguments of Abaya and Rava?
He was
a foundation for their argument. A little bit of a foundation.
The same argument.
Meaning the material was there. Here's the Torah Shebaal Peh. the arguments of Abaya and Rava, the analysis that became crystallized eventually in the Talmud, by Abaya says this, Rava says this, this argument is not new to Abaya and Rava. This argument is part of the process. But at this point in time, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has it, it doesn't yet have its structure. He is a student of Hillel, so there's already the beginning of Hillel's structure, of the six Sedarim of Mishnah, but as yet there isn't this formal structure. At the time of Hillel, this structure begins to take place. And what's fascinating is we have something which we call Mishnah Rishona. You look at a couple of examples. Look at number 10 and 11 for a second. The cases I'm not even that interested in, but it gives you a whole debate in the Gemara number 10. And at the end it says, Loi Kasha, can Mishnah Rishona, can Mishnah Achrona? Oh, this is the Mishnah Rishona, this is the Mishnah Achrona. What is your understanding of Mishnah Rishona and Mishnah Achrona? What's Mishnah Rishona?
First.
What does that mean? The first Mishnah, the second Mishnah, how many Mishnahs did we have? What's that?
Earlier
versions, earlier, what's the word? Gisels, I was thinking of the English word. Earlier, like drafts of the Mishnah, versions of the Mishnah. I mean, the Mishnah didn't just have one, you know, production, and that was there was never anything before it. The Mishnah evolved, and the Gemara itself talks about a Mishnah Rishona and a Mishnah Acharona. In source number 10, source number 11, exactly the same kind of idea. In source number 11, it says Zom Mishnah Rishona. There is talking about a particular halacha of a woman who is engaged, who has an erusin, and she's going to have a kiddushin in 12 months, and can she eat truma? It's an interesting question.
You might understand how they were allowed to do this.
Well, the split, so they didn't live with each other.
Right.
What do you have? Right. What?
Like we just said. All these things.
Oh, we haven't got to that yet. How are they even allowed to produce this order when it's clearly Osa? We'll have to talk about that. Next time, Bezos Hashem, we'll start to talk about that. But it's clear that the Mishnah starts to form one way or the other. We'll see how. Yes?
I also don't understand the whole concept of there being, different drafts of the Mishnah. Doesn't that, give less validity to the Mishnah that
why?
We have? Because it's different.
Why? No, of course. The Mishnah, the final version of the Mishnah is the Psak according to how Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi decided the Psak would go. But of course that process of producing a Psak is a bubbling, ongoing Torah Chaim process. If you take the view that the Mishnah just fell down to Moshe Rabbeinu on Sinai and that was the Mishnah we always have, but that's not the model of Torah Shabbat Peh that we've seen at all this year, is it? It's a process.
But also, the codifying of the Mishnah by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi also confuses me a little bit because, why did Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi get to decide?
That we'll talk about next time. We'll talk about the actual Mishnah next time. We're talking about the pre-Mishnah right now. Have a look in this wonderful Sefer. I brought you a load of quotes today from the Sefer. Sefer Yisot HaMishnah V'Arichata. That is by someone called Rav Reuven Margolius. I put a little picture of him on the back. He's not such a well-known person, but he was a fascinating Rav, lived in the 20th century here in Eretz Yisrael. He passed away some years ago. His books were printed and have been reprinted by Mossad HaRav Kook. And he wrote little pamphlets on various different things. And one of the things he wrote on is the production of the Mishnah. It's rare that you get people to talk about this. Lots of academics in academics programs and Jewish studies programs talk about this kind of thing. But it's rare that you get people really putting together this material from a Torah perspective. And he writes some very interesting things. Look at number 9. As it chila tkufa miyuchedet betzivyona arichat ha-Mishnah. There began now, he's at this period we're talking about, a new period in the developments of the nature of the Mishnah. Up until now, it had just been the odd recording of halachas here and there. We saw personal recording, no structure to the whole thing. But now, hitchilu ziknei beishamai. Beishamai began the process la'aroch mishnatam, to put their Mishnah together. Avaloshanuki in divrehem, hey, but they only gave their own opinion. We know this, right? Beishamai did not quote multiple truths. They only quoted their own opinion. Therefore, their Mishnah, this Mishnah Rishona, didn't really catch on amongst the society of Rabbanim, Shebecholamin, and the people. But Beis Hillel began to write this down. They began to, if you like, produce a Mishnah which was not just halachas psukos, not just do this, do that, do this, do that, but more of a discussion within the Mishnah. That began to be more accepted. Remember what we said about Shammai and Beit Shammai? They clearly are not Sadducim. They're not Sadducees. But their approach was much more apodictic. Apodictic, yes. You know what apodictic means? Apodictic means when you just quote the halakha. Straight out, do this. Meaning the process of recording the analysis is not something that Beit Shammai was that interested in. Beis Hillel, we'll see the famous Gemara in a minute, was much into more into recording the process, and therefore the Chiddush of Rav Zalman Margolis here is that Mishnah Rishona, which was rejected, is more Beis Shammai, and Mishnah Achrona is more Beis Hillel. Look at this one line in number 12. Beis Shammai ke Mishnah Rishona, and Beis Hillel ke Mishnah Achrona. Sha Mishnah Achrona, shehi acha chazara, nishnid b'yamei Rabbi Yeshua. We'll see Rabbi Yeshua and how that works, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Lezer, but this is Mishnah, already Mishnah Achrona. Now, what happened historically is, of course, that the temple was destroyed. Hillel, who lived in the last couple of generations, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the temple was destroyed, and this obviously caused a massive upheaval to the Jewish people. The Sanhedrin had to move. I brought you this little map. You've had this before, if you remember from last semester, but I brought it again because some of you won't remember and some of you weren't here. Lots of you weren't here. This map shows the different travelling of the Sanhedrin from place to place. You see, it left Yerushalayim, it went to Yavne. Anyone been to KBY?
Yes.
Okay. Why is KBY called KBY?
Because it goes
Yavne. Because it goes with the song.
Yeah.
KBY, Kerem Beyavne, is named after the Sanhedrin that was moved to Yavne following the Churban Bayis Sheni. Following that, it moved up into the Galil, and it spent the rest of the next couple of hundred years up in the Galil, in Usha, in Bet Sha'arim, and Sipori. By the way, Bet Sha'arim, I think I said this last time I mentioned this. Has anyone been to Bet Sha'arim? You've been to Beit Sharim? Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
It's like a little jewel. It's United Nations Heritage Site, World Heritage Site, and yet most people have never been there. I discovered it by accident. I was driving past there with my wife in the car on the way to Kibbutz Lavi or something like that, and we said, oh, look, Beit Sharim, that's interesting, a little brown sign. We said, let's go there, and it was absolutely fascinating. We had like a private tour all around the place. It's basically the remains of the town where the Sanhedrin sat, of Beit Sharim from the time of the Mishnah, and it's all there, all the tombs of hundreds and hundreds of people from the time of Tanayim and this and that. It's an amazing place. Should go there. It's been beautifully preserved and excavated. It really is worth a trip. So what's going on in Yavne? Yavne, on the other hand, is a bit like a flea pit sometimes in terms of the area. It's sand dunes and there's nothing much there. Kerem Yavne, if you've ever visited the yeshiva, is mamash in the middle of nowhere. That's one of the reasons that some guys like going there. If you want to go to a yeshiva which is in the middle of nowhere, so you go to Kerem Yavne and you just sit and learn all the time and you don't get distracted, because if you want to go anywhere it's just too much bother, which is one good reason for going there. Now, have a look at number 30. Some other guys like to be in the middle of everything and they like to be close to everywhere, but some people don't. It's a bit like whether you go to MMY or Michlala, you know? You like being out in the middle of nowhere or you like being in the middle of... That's not the only reason. Anyway, number 13. Says the Gemara like this, the Tosefta, Mishenichnesu Chachamim Bekerem Beyavna. Why is it called a Kerem? What's a Kerem? Why is it called a Kerem Beyavna?
There was a vineyard.
There was no vineyard, it was a yeshiva.
Kerem?
Why is yeshiva's Kerem Beyavna called a vineyard in Yavna? But why a vineyard? Torah grew like a vineyard. That's very poetic. It's because it said they arranged them all in rows. Very
well,
much
like a cluster of grapes.
They created this whole like structure. I didn't catch that, but what did you say?
Like a cluster of grapes.
Not cluster of grapes, like a vineyard. You know how vineyards grow in very organized rows? So Kerem Yavne is they created, since they're already creating a new yeshiva, building a whole new thing in Yavne, they built this beautiful new road sort of organized thing, and that's why it's called Kerem Yavne. Maybe there are poetic reasons as well, like Shoshana said, could be, but that's the posh upshot reason. Kerem Yavne. So they said like this, hi, by all means, do come in. Hi, a whole crowd. Luckily, I have some spreadsheets.
Amazing. Great, thank you so much.
Who's related here? You're related, but you're not related.
No.
I mean, related to someone, I'm sure. That's very good. What are your names?
Leora.
Leora and?
Dana.
And Dana's mum.
Yeah.
Okay, who had a name as well, I'm sure. But that's not, you know, we can't get into everything right now. Okay, fine. Let's have a look at number 13. Mishenichnesu chachamim bekerim b'yavna. When the chachamim were on source number 13 on page 3. When the chachamim came, they moved into Kerem b'yavna. Amru, they said the following. Listen carefully. Asida sha'ah, there will come a time. Sheyeh adam avakesh davar midivrei Torah ve'einu motzi. People will search out Torah, but they won't know where to find it. They won't be able to find things. Midivrei Sofrim, they are looking for rabbinic laws, but ain't a motive, but they won't be able to find them. Shinei Amari brings a passage from Amos. Hine yamin baim nu Hashem lakim. Okay, v'ishlachti rav. Aris, there'll be a hunger in the land. V'loy rav lechem. It's a very famous pesukim. Not a hunger for bread. V'loy tam alamayim. Not a thirst for water. Ki nishmoyes divrei Hashem. Fine. Shelo yehei davar midivrei Torah doim lechaveru. See, he says, we don't want there to be everything to be mixed up altogether. Things have to be more organized. Amru, they said, Natchil mi Hillel v'Shammai. Let's start with Hillel and Shammai and create some order. Shammai oimrim mikavchala, Hillel oimrim mikabayim. Meaning, this is just an example of what the kind of thing that they said of Hillel and Shammai. This happens to be how much challah, how much flour you need in order to take challah with a brocha from when you're making bread. So Shammai has this opinion, Hillel has that opinion, Chachamim said this opinion, etc., etc. Meaning, you see here also something happened in Kerem B'yavna. Something happened when they went to Kerem B'yavna. They felt that there was a real need for order. This couldn't continue anymore. Hillel had already started the process, but in Kerem B'yavna they accelerated that process. Again, Kerem B'yavna is two generations already after Hillel. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai moved, or one generation after, moved the yeshiva to Kerem B'yavna. What happened in Kerem B'yavna? So a lot of very important things. First of all, the important Gemara in Erevin that you need to know, that we looked at last semester, but you need to look at again. Number 14. Amri Abba Abba Amma Shmuel. So Shmuel said the following. Shalosh Shanim Nechlegu Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Now Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are already at the time of Kerem B'yavna. They lived at the end of the Second Temple, over into the, after the destruction of Kerem B'yavna. So Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, they argued for 3 years. Halalu Amri Halachim Haseinu, Halalu Amri Halachim Haseinu. This one said the Halach's like us, and this group said the Halach's like us. So what happened? Yatsa Baskol. So a Baskol came out and said, Elu Ve'elu Divi Elokim Chayim V'Halacha Ki Beis Hillel. This is familiar, I'm sure, to a lot of you. What is a Baskol? Just remind me. Don't say a voice from a God. What is a bat call? You've all heard of a bat call. What is a bat call? Yes.
I say it was kind of like a real Kodesh type of thing where they all had the same realization at once.
Right. A realization, an understanding. In other words, it's not Nevuah. Nevuah is Kol Hashem. So it's not Kol. It's the child of a Kol. And it's not a Ben Kol. It's a bat call. Again, never take anything for granted. If everyone's been talking to you since you were 5 years old about a bat call, so you can ask the question, why did it not a bat call? You know, all of a sudden we're into feminism. It's a bat call. The answer is, it's not the call, it's a subsidiary of the call, it's the child of the call. It's not as clear as the call, and it's not even a Ben call, it's a subtle. Women are maybe more subtle sometimes than men, okay? And therefore the bat call is a subtle realization that this is the reality. They have this bat call, it passed them like Beis Hillel. By the way, I didn't bring you the end of this quote, I should have done. Why does the bat call say that the halacha is like Beis Hillel?
Because they're nice.
Not just because they're nice.
And they taught how
nice. Because they taught multiple opinions. Like I said before, Beis Hillel taught their opinion and Shammai's opinion. And also, they taught Beis Shammai's opinion before their opinion. So Beis Hillel preserved this analytical multiple truths. Okay, fine. Until the Baskol, people did what they liked. Number 15. Look at number 15. Actually, Yatzar Baskol, Kala Roti Lahachme Al Atzmai Ninhoi Kachumri Beis Shammai, Kachumri Beis Hillel. Before the Baskol, there were different kinds of people. Some people were Machmir like Beis Shammai and Machmir like Beis Hillel. Some people are chasing chumras all the time. We did this in Gemara, remember?
Yeah.
Okay. Someone who wants to be machmir like Beis Shammai, machmir like Beis Hillel. Al zenema says the Gemara about such a person. It says, "Haksil b'choshech hoylech." A fool walks in the dark. By the way, the Gemara clarified that that's when the chumras are mutually exclusive. When you're following chumras that don't make any sense, when you're following both chumras, I'm not getting into the examples now, they're very complicated and involve lots of backbones, which I'm not getting into now. I thought I could hear birds then.
Nice.
I thought, like, so I know there's something wrong with my ears, but once I start hearing birds screeching, I really have to go to the doctor straight away. Okay? So, If you follow all the chumras of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, you're a fool, it says. Kekulei elu ve'elu, if you look, go looking for colours, you find the lenient opinions everywhere you can get for Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, Nikra Rosha, then you're just wicked, basically, because you're trying to find the easy way out wherever you go. You're not looking for truth. Ela ikakulei didein, or didein, or kachumra didein. Ikakulei didein, or kachumra didein. You follow either the chumras and the colours of this one, either you follow Beit Shammai, or you follow Beit Hillel, but you have to be consistent. Fine. Hada the tema adalo yatsa baskol, says the Gemara Yerushalmi. That's only until the baskol came out. Avel mishi yatsa baskol, but once they followed, they heard the baskol. La oilam halacha kedivrei Beis Hillel. We always now follow Beis Hillel. The kala oiva al divrei Beis Hillel chayiv misa. Interestingly, divrei Beis Shammai were thrown out so comprehensively that now it's not even a legitimate minority opinion.
So, was Shammai completely irrelevant?
Beis Shammai, the psak of Beis Shammai becomes in halacha almost completely irrelevant.
And
right?
What about the people in Beis Shammai? Do they keep going by Beis Shammai?
No, because they follow the baskol. Everyone followed this baskol.
Even Shammai.
Even Shammai. In fact, we learned last semester that the reason the baskol came out is to appeal to Shammai, because they killed the majority. They didn't need a baskol because they followed the majority. But Beis Shammai, who all profess to follow the majority, because Beis Shammai, remember, saying, we are right, and if we're right, God doesn't want us to follow the majority if we know we're right. So the baskol will appeal to them. But one way or the other, they resolved the problem. And we no longer follow Beis Shammai. Even the Shammaiites were okay with them. And historically, that happened at a certain point. And remember, and we talked about this, I keep saying we talked about this last semester, but we did. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel was not just a disagreement, it became a war. It became an actual physical war, where Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel were killing each other. At a certain point, they realized in Kerem B'Yavna, that's it, that has to stop. Two questions, yes.
I don't know what source this, but I've always heard that there is this disagreement.
Yes.
And then the baskol came and said that it's according to Beis Hillel, and they turned around and said, we don't pass them according to baskol.
So that's the next Gemara. That didn't happen in the Gemara and Eirubin. In the Gemara and Eirubin, everyone hears the baskol and goes away happy. In the Gemara and Baba Metzia, which we're going to see in a minute, they say we don't pass them like a baskol. So then you have to, then Tosfos and everyone's trying to work out, well, what's the difference between these two cases? Here they do. What you've done is you put the two Gemaras together. In the Gemara, in Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, they do follow the baskol. We'll see the Gemara you're talking about in a minute. So we'll see your Gemara. Yes, Elisha.
Was this baskol, was it given to, did everyone get this baskol realization, or was it like the leaders and then they?
I don't know. Whoever got it, and that was the end of the debate. But it was, they came to the realization this has to end. It has to stop now, and there's no way we can go from here. Who was it? I don't know, but he called Tom. And that is how the Mishnah was produced, yes.
So if Beit Shammai isn't regarded anymore, how come is the idea that, like, after Mashiach will happen?
Okay, that's an Arizal. It talks about the fact that after Mashiach comes, maybe we'll have a reassessment of the process. It's a long conversation, but it could be, and, you know, the 32nd version is like this. Okay? If Beis Hillel, if this is the line of the maximal understanding of the Sanhedrin, and Hillel's within that line, meaning we pass it like Beis Hillel because that's the majority, and the Baskol said follow the majority as well. Shammai, if you like, is in Shammaim. That's why they call Shammai, by the way. That is part of the whole reason. They are minority opinions which may be appealing to a higher level truth. We don't follow that. We had a whole shiur on this. But in Mashiach, when Mashiach comes, the level of our understanding will be increased. That the whole world will be full of the understanding of. So this line will go up, and Beis Shammai will now be inside the line. So it's not just that we'll change to Beis Shammai because we feel like doing something more machmir now that Mashiach's here, we'll all be frumer. It's because the Beis Shammai now becomes within the, if you like, the ambit of Jewish understanding much more. It's no longer just a minority opinion that happens to be out there in Shammai. That is the very short answer to a very long conversation. Someone else had their hand up. Yes, Nadiva.
You might also say, like when we were discussing about the last message, you said that like the baskol would never like actually be literal.
No, it's not a voice coming out of the walls.
No. I don't mean it in that sense. But that never happened. I mean, that like really.
No, I don't know. I think I said that. Did I say that? I didn't say that. I didn't say a baskol never. Something happened, which they call a baskol, and after that they changed their understanding of the way to do things. What it was, I don't think it was a physical voice coming out of the walls, but something happened. It was a real something. the Chazal call a bas kol. It's Ruach HaKodesh, it's this, it's that. But it was something. I think it was nothing.
But also within that like spectrum, how you said like our realization is going to change. So now that both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai would be within our realm of understanding, wouldn't that create like, a more machlokes yet? Or is, or is the realization supposed to be like not going to create more machlokes, but bring us to a realization where this is actually the right answer?
Right, I think the latter. I mean, by the time the Mashiach comes, hopefully we'll have got over the Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel tearing each other apart problem, okay? And we'll be able to assimilate that opinion into Judaism without causing another civil war. Hopefully Mashiach will be part of that process. Okay?
Okay, fine. Let us move on to source number... Oh, look, look at the end. Look at source, the end of source number 15. Eichen yasa bas kol, says Yerushalmi, where did they hear the bas kol? Rav Bibi, Amar b'shem Rabbi Yochanan b'yavna yasa bas kol. In case you ever wanted to know, where did the bas kol happen? In Yavna. It was in KBY. That's where they have the bas kol. And that's very critical.
Bas
kol. It should be called Bas Kol Yeshiva.
Yeah.
You can suggest that. You can speak to your friends in KBY and say, "Do you know you're, that's where you're learning where the Bas Kol came out?"
That's
fine.
So good.
To the point. Yeah, it sounds a bit good. It sounds a bit semi Bas Kol, but not Kol. Okay. Yeah. Have a look in number 16. This is quite a famous Mishnah from the very beginning of the Mishnayos, the story of Rabbi Tarfon. Meaning, well, how do you say the Shema? So it says Beis Shammai, in the evening everyone has to lie down, because it says it was Shach Becha, lie down and say the Shema in the evening, and in the morning everyone has to stand up, because it says it was Kumecha. And Beis Hillel say, no, Kol Adam Kari Kedarka, you can read Shema however you like. You can lie down, you can stand up, you can sit down, you can do what you like. As it says, Belech Bechava Derech, you can do it whatever, however way you do it. How do Beis Hillel understand the words of B'shach Becha of Kumecha if it's not telling you how to read the Shema? It doesn't say, it doesn't mean leaning, it says laying down and standing up. What does it mean? Just in Halacha?
Time-wise.
But time-wise. B'shach Becha means at night time, Kumecha means at daytime. Fine. Story. The Mishnah comes. This is the very first Mishnah in Shas. Or one of the very first. Amar Rabbi Tarfon, and Rabbi Tarfon said, "Ani ayiti baba derech. I was once on a journey. Vitesi likras, and I lay down. I got off my horse and I lay down to read Krishma kedivrei Beis Shammai, because I wanted to be machmir like Beis Shammai and read. Well, why not? In other words, Beis Hillel agree that you can lie down. You can do what you like. So why not be machmir like Beis Shammai? He thought, like be mekayim both shitas. V'shikanti ba'atzmi." And I put myself in danger. You know, I could have been attacked. I could have been robbed. Mipnei alistim, there are bandits and robbers. So in the yeshiva, they turned around to Amrullah. They said to him, "Kedai yitzel achay ba'atzmacha. If you'd have died, it would have been your own fault. You're responsible for your life. How can you do that? Shavatal did Rabbi Hillel. You went against Beis Hillel. There is no such thing as Beis Shammai anymore. Forget it. It's out of here. We no longer follow Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel is the only way forward." That's what the Bas Kol achieved, and everybody agreed on that. You can't start bringing that up again. And Devorah Leah's question about the other Bas Kol, which is coming now in number 17, a generation later, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, we'll come back to them later, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, who had this major argument in the yeshiva, and I didn't bring you the whole Gemara, but many of you know the Gemara. Remember they're arguing about an oven and when it's tameh and when it's tahor? You've seen it in other classes, I'm sure. And Rabbi Eliezer says the oven is tahor, and the Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachamim say the oven is tameh. Okay? And he brings all the arguments he can possibly bring, and he says, if the halacha is like me, then the tree will prove it, and the tree starts running up and down. You know what I'm talking about? And if the halacha is like me, the water will prove it, the wall starts running uphill. If the halacha is like me, the wall's the base of Midrash. And then, fine. Amru, he says to them, looking number 17, he said, "Im halacha kemoisi, if the halacha is like me, min hashamayim yochichu, from heaven they will prove it. Yatzta baskol, oh, just when you need one. Another bas kol came out, whatever that was, the Amra, and said, why are you arguing with Rabbi Eliezer when the halacha always follows him? Amar Rabbi Yeshua, al raglav, Amar Rabbi Yeshua stood up on his feet and said, loy b'shamayim hi. Here, he won't follow the bas kol. Loy b'shamayim hi. Amru, they said, on that day, by the way, then, what does loy b'shamayim hi mean? Where's it from, first of all?
line?
The quote, Lo B'Shamayim, where's it from? Dvarim. You said Dvarim? Yeah.
It's
Parshas Vayu, the Netzavim. It's at the end of Dvarim there. It says, Lo B'Shamayim, the Torah is no longer in heaven. It's given over to you as human beings. Rabbi Yeshua is using that saying, you can't bring proofs from heaven. Even if God says the halachas like you, I'm not listening to that. I'm not listening to that. They asked Rabbi Eliezer, are you now prepared to back down? And he said, no. Amru, so they said, Oysa Hayom, on that day, Heviu Kal Tara Shetir Rabbi Eliezer, they brought everything that Rabbi Eliezer had ever given a Hechsher to, the Sarfon Ba'eshon, they burnt it. All of the Taras, everything that he said was Tahor, they burnt it. The Chachamim, they said it's all trade.
Who's Tahor?
Rabbi Eliezer, everything Rabbi Eliezer said was okay, they got rid of it. The Nimnu Alav, they gathered a meaning together, Uparachuva, and they put him in Chayrim. They put him in the Chayrim, they threw him out. And by the way, the Gemara continues that he never got out of that Chayrim. He died very bitter, very angry, and there was a whole very nasty politics in the whole thing. Why were they so hard on Rabbi Eliezer? What did he do that was so terrible? He disagreed with the Chachamim. You put people in Chayrim for that? Yeah.
Wasn't because he was telling he was like a Zayat Yachid and like you go according to the road, so that was.
And he's like a Zakin Mamre, maybe, like you can't, but not just that. Mm-hmm. That Rabbi Yeshua was the, if you like, the successor for Beis Hillel. Rabbi Eliezer is basically replaying the whole issue of Beis Shammai. He's saying, I'm right in heaven. Like I was saying to Natalia before, my opinion is correct. So what if the majority doesn't agree with me? If I'm right, God never wants me to follow the majority if they're wrong. And he's even called a Shamuti. Look at number 11, 18. Kol Yamav, says the Gemara Nida, Kol Yamav Shem Rabbi Eliezer, Hayu Oisin Kareb Yeshua. While Rabbi Eliezer was alive, they insisted they could never paskin like him. They always went like Rabbi Yeshua. La'acha Patiraso, after he died, Shem Rabbi Eliezer, Hechsi Rabbi Yeshua Esed Avad Yoshna. He allowed people once again to paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. What was he scared of while Rabbi Eliezer was alive? He was scared of another Beis Hillel Beis Shammai war. Rabbi Eliezer, the Chai of my time alone, why did they not follow Rabbi Eliezer when he was alive? Rabbi Eliezer, Shamuti who? He was a Shamuti. Now, Shamuti has a double meaning. Shamuti means he was in Chayrim. They put it, he was excommunicated. And it also means he was a Shamainik. Meaning he was revamping, reopening this whole disaster that they had previously, where people were following Beis Shammai and they were going to be drawn after that whole way of thinking. And Rabbi Yeshua said, no, that cannot happen again. We have to put an end to that. We are now putting a synthesis together, not breaking up back into the old factions. Yes.
So why would one pastor call Seder for the Beis Hillel and the other one would say Rabbi Yehoshua like Beis Shammai?
Oh, so Tosfos asked that question. Tosfos on the Daf in Bava Metzia asked that question. He says, why would we let the basketball here not follow the basketball there? So he brings a few different answers. One answer, it's actually, you're not taking my Gemara class, are you? I'm not saying you should, but I'm saying, well, because it's actually today's Gemara, in Gemara. But one says that the bas kol was only coming from the kavod of Rabbi Eliezer. It was like a real bas kol, whatever. But another reason it says that the bas kol, we followed bas kol with Beis Hillel because they were the majority. The bas kol for Beis Shammai, we don't follow because he's the minority. Now you're asking, why would the bas kol follow one opinion there and one opinion here? Well, maybe the bas kol just follows whatever God paskins, quotes and quotes. But Rabbi Yeshua is turning around and saying, I don't actually care at the end of the day what God paskins, as it were. We will follow the majority either way. In the first case, the majority was like Beis Hillel. In the second case, the majority was like Beis Hillel, etc. They'll follow the majority.
I just happened to follow the bas kol because it's also the majority.
Right, correct. And therefore, Tosfos asks, if you have a majority, why do you need a bas kol? And there's a whole discussion, which isn't really not for today. Yes. Not for today, right? Okay, fine. Let's just go on for a little bit. Because there's a few other points that I want to make for you. Just go over the page, please, 22 and 23, and then I want to tell you about a couple of other things. Look at these last two quotes in 22 and 23. Again from Rav Margolis. She'ad she'yatza ha-baskol. Until the baskol came out, bizman Rabban Gamliel b'yavna, in the time of Rabban Gamliel b'yavna. And by the way, I skipped number 19. Number 19 is an interesting insight to the fact that even the family of Beis Hillel, the Nesi'im, were beginning to paskin like Shammai and Beis Shammai at a certain point, meaning there was a, it was a very dangerous time, but there were people pulling in all sorts of directions. Says Rav Gott Margolis, up until the Bas Kol came out, Od Niskru Tamid is Shammai VeHillel. They were still talking about the different opinions, but once the Bas Kol came out, that came to an end. Have a look in number 23. Ulam Misibus Medinyot, for many political reasons, Lo Yochel Gam Habayis HaGadol Hazer. Okay, Lahatid Pu'ulasei HaKabira. We couldn't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore. We didn't have all the rabbis in one place. As hitchil kol echad mechachmei adol laharbitz teira bebeis midrash haprati. What you had is each rav setting up his own private bet midrash, meaning in this time. And if they got together and agreed that they were going to start a, you know, paskin one way or another, it could be the people who weren't there at that particular gathering, they could say, we don't care about your minion, we're doing our own thing. And therefore, this is the important line, that's why you ended up having minority opinions. Rabbi Pliny, Rabbi X says this, Rabbi Pliny Amar Kain. And even when they went more like one opinion than another, they didn't get rid of the minority opinions. Remember, we'll finish with this point, it's very important. While there was still a functioning Sanhedrin, at the end of the day, you weren't left with minority opinions. Once you have this new situation after the Beis HaMikdash, after the Sanhedrin is functioning properly, you end up with minority opinions and people pulling in different directions. Rabbi Eliezer is pulling in this way, and there are people trying to follow Beis Shammai in this way, and you have a Bas Kol. It's all breaking apart a little bit. And therefore, all of this is by way of introduction to you, really, to understand that when they eventually put the Mishnah together, the purpose of the Mishnah was to actually put an end to all of this. And to say, we now need, even though, strictly speaking, we're not allowed to do this, and Abby's question is very good, and next time we'll have to see how they were allowed to do this, we now need a text, we need even an oral text, we need a canon, we need an authorized version of the Torah Shebaal Peh that everybody has to follow. We need to make it clear that Beis Shammai is out. We need to make it clear of the minority opinions, which ones are recorded and which ones are not recorded, and how we're going to paskin in each case. We need something that eventually became called the Mishnah. The Mishnah Achrona, as we saw, the later versions, the last final version of the Mishnah, they needed that. And therefore, it's important, next time we're going to look on Tuesday, Be'ezat Hashem, at the actual Mishnah that we have, and who wrote it, and how it was written, and how it's formatted and structured. But until you understand today's class, which is what was going on up until that period, this kind of disruption and this feeling of strife almost still within the Jewish people post Korban, then you won't know really what the Mishnah was doing. Just one word at the end. This last five sources where I talked about Boi Bayam on that day is a massively important, not massively important, for today's class it's not so important, but it's a major political upheaval that happened with Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel, who was also leaning towards a Shammai position, was usurped, was overruled. There was a revolution in the Bet Midrash, and he was thrown out as the Nasi. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Elazar ben Azari was brought in, and on that day, it talks about all sorts of new ideas. Maybe at the beginning of next time, bring this with you, or we'll start with one particular source for how this happened and where this led to. Again, another revolutionary thing that happened at that point, which led to the beginning of the Mishnah. So hopefully that was clear, even though I can't hear what I'm saying. Hopefully you could. And we will move on from there, Be'ezrat Hashem, next time. Okay, ladies, thank you very much.